Good afternoon, committee members and to the public. The Education Finance Committee will come to order. And we do not yet have a quorum, but I wanted to make sure that we have ample time to have the commissioner present to us on the recent recommendations and finding on the Indian Education Working Group report that was just released. And we have a few testifiers as well indicated they would like to share remarks. So we'll take care of the minutes later, but I wanted to make sure that we get right into listening to what you have to present this to the committee, Commissioner, and hopefully having some good dialogue with committee members afterwards. So with that, welcome. Thank you for coming. I think, third time before the committee so far this year? Very pleased that you're spending some time with us and providing these recommendations. So. Oh, and we do now suddenly have quorum. So then we can take care of housekeeping quick before we get into this. So Representative Detmer, would you like to move the minutes?
Madam Chair, so move.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion minutes are approved. And with that, Commissioner, welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, Dr. Brenda Casselli's Commissioner of Education, thank you for having me here today. I'm just so pleased today that you have taken time to hear from all of us, and there's lots of people with us here today to testify on behalf of the State of Indian Education in Minnesota and to give their stories about how this is impacting their children and their communities. Today is a historic day. I believe it's one that we will remember as a day we all came together in partnership with our 11 tribal leaders, stakeholders, and community members to say that the current state of Indian education in Minnesota is unacceptable and that significant effort and resources will be required so that we don't lose a generation of American Indian students. Today we bring forward bold recommendations that impact the nearly 20,000 Native students in our state who for far too long have been forgotten and left behind. With your help, we can provide targeted support along with accountability across our entire state and positively and quickly change the troubling reality of the statistics we'll share with you in just a moment. Our Minnesota Constitution compels us to provide a uniform system of public education to Minnesota students. And yesterday in the Senate, in my confirmation hearing, I spoke about equity and excellence being forefront in everything that we've done the past 4 years. And today is an example of bringing forward a place where we do not have an equitable educational opportunity for our American Indian students, especially based on the results. Yesterday we released our graduation rates, and we're just over 50% of our American Indian students graduating. Let's fulfill our promise of an excellent education for all of our children, especially our Native children. Thank you. I'd like to introduce Dennis Olson, Director of Indian Education. He will present to you some of the history of Indian education in Minnesota, some of the action that this legislative body has taken in the past and where we are today. And then I'll speak to the recommendations from the working group that the governor asked me to convene with our consultation legislation so that we can be sure that we're forwarding the recommendations in partnership with our 11 tribal leaders. And then we have three tribal leaders who are with us today who will speak specifically on the recommendations, and I think there's other testifiers as well. So I can't thank you enough, Madam Chair, for taking the time to hear about the state of Indian education in Minnesota.
Thank you, and welcome, Mr. Olson. If you'd please just identify yourself for the record, and we welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Dennis Olson, the Director of the Office of Indian Education at the Minnesota Department of Education. I'm also an enrolled member of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. I appreciate the opportunity, Madam Chair and members, to present, as Dr. Casselius laid out for us, the state of Indian education in Minnesota, more importantly titled A Story of Hope. For the members that may not be aware, we do have 11 distinct sovereign tribal nations here in the state of Minnesota. We have 7 Ojibwe communities and 4 Dakota communities, the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Spirit Chippewa, the White Earth Nation, the Leech Lake Band, the Red Lake Nation, Boys Fort Band of Chippewa, and the Grand Portage Band of Ojibwe in the northern two-thirds of our state. And in the southern one-third of our state, we have 4 Dakota communities, our Prairie Island Indian community, Shakopee, Mdewakanton Sioux community, Upper Sioux community, and Lower Sioux community. This is a map showing where our tribal nations here in Minnesota are located. You can see the northern or northwestern part of the state has the geographic distinction of having our three largest communities in the state, the White Earth Nation, Red Lake Nation, and Leech Lake Band. We also have the Boys Fort Band there in northern Minnesota, the Fond du Lac Band, Grand Portage Band in the northeast corner, and then Mille Lacs Band in central Minnesota, and then our four Dakota communities again. Where our American Indian students are concentrated in the state, this is a map provided from the Minnesota Rural Education Association. Mr. Fred Nolan had put these maps together, and I apologize, the one thing I had left off this map is actually the key that shows what the colors mean. But the darker areas, the brown, and then followed by the red, closer to the dark orange, and then the yellow, represent our highest concentration of American Indian students. So if you could think about the map prior, you could see that the northern Minnesota areas, particularly northwest, areas in St. Louis County, area in Cook County, they're all synonymous with our tribal nations. But you'll also see our metro area has a really dark area, too. We have a very high concentration of American Indian students in our seven-county metro area as well. So as Dr. Casilius alluded, we have nearly 20,000 American Indian students in the state of Minnesota that attend K through 12 public school. It represents a little over 2.3% of our total student population here in the state. As I had mentioned, we have one-third of our American Indian students, roughly 6,500 students right here in our seven-county metro area, as well as the remaining two-thirds of our American Indian students spread out through greater Minnesota. We also have American Indian students that attend tribal contract schools, better known as the Bureau of Indian Education funded schools. Those are located in the Fond du Lac Reservation, the Fond du Lac Ojibwe School, the Neosheng School in the Mille Lacs Reservation, Circle of Life Academy in the White Earth Nation, and the Bugganegijik School located in Leech Lake. We also have a lot of American Indian students attending school in our charter system as well. So this is a short graph of the increase recently in our American Indian graduation rates. Again, Dr. Casilius mentioned that yesterday our graduation rates were released, and we finally breached the 50% mark in graduating American Indian students. Unfortunately, when I started my position here at MDE a little over 2.5 years ago, a report was released from the U.S. Department of Education looking at all four-year completion rates of every state, and actually ranked Minnesota 50th out of 50 in the nation for graduating American Indian students. We were absolutely at the bottom of the barrel. It was an incredibly sobering statistic to see. I feel as though a very big black eye in terms of how we educate and serve our American Indian students in our tribal communities. But you can see with the work of MDE providing supports through various methods, in addition to rebuilding the Indian Education Office, we've seen a gain of over 8 points in the last 3 years in our graduation rates. A little bit of history on Indian education here in the state of Minnesota. And I apologize for the small print, but it actually dates back to the 1930s. And in the 1950s, actually, the legislature appropriated some funds to really kind of start the Indian education program that we know today. Into the 1970s, Indian education was very strong here in the state of Minnesota. I would consider the state of Minnesota the birthplace of Indian education. In 1969, the National Indian Education Association, which is a really large advocacy organization now located in Washington, D.C., started right here in Minneapolis in 1969. A lot of our national Indian education leaders started their work here in the state of Minnesota. In the late 70s, there was some legislation around special education and homeschool liaisons providing cultural supports to Indian students. In 1982, there was actually a policy statement adopted by the State Board of Education at the time, and it's up there as a copy for reference. I pulled out a couple of key pieces. Number one, the state of Minnesota recognizes self-determination and ensuring the maximum participation by Indian people and by tribes. The state of Minnesota recognizes the unique sovereign status, the relationship of the federal government, and urges the legislature to recognize. Now again, this was a policy statement in 1982 issued by the State Board at the time. It also directed the commissioner to take a leadership role in meeting the educational needs of Indian students and recommended that LEAs do the same. Most importantly, it called for the involvement of tribes, communities, youth, and parents. And finally, it was a large commitment to incorporate language, culture, and heritage into the curriculum. We fast forward to the mid-80s, there was a needs assessment done, and then in 1988, actually, a landmark legislation here at the state level, better known as the Indian Education Act of 1988, which currently guides our Indian education programming here in the state. There was another needs assessment done in the mid-90s, and some revisions were done to the legislation. In 2000, Indian education programs that were separated for post-secondary preparation and for Indian history, language, and culture were combined into what we now know today as the Success for the Future grant program. In 2002, unfortunately, we had a large state deficit and three field offices, one located in Bemidji, one located in Duluth, and one located in St. Paul, were all consolidated into the then Children, Families, and Learning in Roseville. This is the lead-off paragraph to the Indian Education Act of 1988 state legislation. I won't read the whole paragraph, but there's a couple of key pieces that I've bolded in there. Number one is that the legislature recognizes the unique educational and culturally related academic needs of American Indian people. At the bottom, it says these programs are specially designed to meet the unique educational or culturally related academic needs, or both. And one important thing to stress that's woven throughout the Indian Education Act here in the state as well as in federal legislation is that culturally related and academic needs are married throughout. They cannot be separated if we're to see success for American Indian students. So where we are currently in terms of administration of programs, my office administers the Success for the Future grant programs. It is currently a competitive grant, and we fund 32 school districts and schools in the state right now. Although, as you know from the governor's proposed budget request, there's a lot more need out there than we're able to currently serve through our current grant program. We also administer the Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program. That is four public school districts in high needs areas coupled with post-secondary preparation programs in our higher education institutions that offer specific training for American Indian teachers. We also have two programs that we provide funding to our four BIE schools, our Bureau of Indian Education schools, one being tribal school equalization funding, and the other offering an annual appropriation of $68,000 for tribal early childhood family education, ECFE. Finally, we administer the Ethel Curry American Indian Leadership Scholarship as well. That was a bequeathment from Ms. Ethel Curry to the state to provide higher education opportunities for American Indian students in the state. A little bit of our recent progress with our Success for the Future grants. We looked at data comparing our last round of funding, which ended in 2012. That was our last round before our current round was started. And we compared those currently funded Success for the Future districts to other school districts in the state that receive federal Indian education support but not state Indian education funding support. And we noticed that in 2012, there was over an 8-point graduation rate difference between those school districts that we provided state Indian education grant funds to, and in 2013, almost a 6-point difference. One of the schools I wanted to highlight in terms of closing the achievement gap is St. Louis County Schools District 2142, and they have a focus within their Success for the Future funding on math proficiency, providing math coaches in every building, and working through cognitively guided instruction, providing culturally relevant material in math instruction, and have seen large gains within math proficiency with their Indian students. They also have a focus on post-secondary preparation and concurrent enrollment as well, looking at career preparation and life after high school for American Indian students. Finally, a really strong focus on attendance and support through mentors and the Check and Connect student engagement model. And the one piece I had highlighted there in the 2014 graduation rate data is you can actually see in terms of gap closure, the American Indian graduation rate has exceeded the graduation rate for all students within that school district. I want to, Madam Chair, wrap it up by turning it back over to Commissioner Casilius. But first of all, really, as Commissioner had started off, recognizing all of the people in the room, all the community members. We have tribal leaders here today. We have tribal government representatives, Indian education directors, Indian education staff, of course, elders. We had students here today sharing the day with us. Most importantly, I want to recognize those that have come before me today and have really paved the way to provide an opportunity for not only myself, but for all of us in the room to present this information that is critical as we move forward in addressing issues concerning American Indian students. So, Madam Chair, I just want to thank you very much for your time today and appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Any questions from committee members? Representative Firtas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that presentation. I've got just a couple of questions that I made notes on from your presentation. How does Minnesota compare in terms of numbers of indigenous peoples to the state of Minnesota versus the other states?
Yeah, Minnesota has one of the highest concentrations of American Indian people with other states. Of course, we're talking about California, Alaska, Arizona, New Mexico, Washington State. But I'm not sure where the exact placement is, but definitely ranks high in terms of concentration.
Okay, well, that might... Thank you, Madam Chair. That might lead to a little bit of the percentage issue with regard to placing at the bottom. Obviously, if you have more members of a community, that could make it more difficult to assimilate, you know, smaller numbers of people into that. The second question I was interested in learning about is the 1988 Act in Minnesota. Do you have any data? What was the graduation rate back in 1988? What have we accomplished in 30 years, or nearly 30 years?
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative, we've stayed, unfortunately, pretty flat over the last 30 years. One of the big challenges is that we hear often from our school districts and from our communities is that we just haven't had the resources and really the opportunity to ramp up the culturally related needs, working through curriculum, working through supports, whether they be social supports or supports within the buildings. And so, you know, we're just now seeing some progress, unfortunately, after close to 30 years of passage of that legislation.
Representative Hurtas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm finished.
Thank you. And I know the department has more presentation, but I think we'll take a few questions and then we'll move on to the next portion of your presentation. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner and Mr. Olson. Good to see you again. I just want to focus very quickly on the Office of Indian Ed. So I was here in the early 2000s when we pretty much, quite frankly, destroyed that office, in my opinion. It was basically on life support. There were indeed a number of budgetary issues the state was responding to, and so there were lots of hurt happening in other parts of the state. But this one seemed to me had a particularly huge impact because it really was, in my opinion, the focal area, our ability to be able, pretty much our only way, to be able to focus the state's investments and energies with the student population. And so my question for you is just to very quickly expound a little bit more on why it is important to have an Office of Indian Ed, and also why it's important to have that office be present not just here in the Twin Cities metro area, but out in Indian country, out in greater Minnesota, where we have historic communities. And then if you just very, very quickly tell us about what the funding situation is relative to that office. Are we maintaining a decent investment in the work of that office?
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, thank you for the question. Great question. Actually, there were quite a few questions there. Yeah, as you think back through the timeline and fast forward to 2002, you know, and I had mentioned there were three fully funded and fully staffed offices, two in greater Minnesota and one here in the metro. The office in Duluth in particular was charged with working on training and technical assistance throughout the state, so actually going to school buildings and providing on-site training, working with American Indian Parent Advisory Committees, working with teachers, working with curriculum development, and unfortunately, that was stripped, and the office was consolidated. And unfortunately, fast forward a little bit further to 2007, there was actually just one staff member left in the Office of Indian Education from 2007 until I was hired in 2012. to juggle those balls, really, and travel the state. And we know it's critically important to have presence in greater Minnesota because that's where a lot of our American Indian students are concentrated, and that's where our communities are. And so rather have, you know, although many people in this room traveled over four or five hours to get here today, asking them to do that on a consistent basis, to come to MDE to receive training, is incredibly disrespectful and taxing as well. And so we need to be where the community members are, definitely. And Representative, I don't know if I addressed all your questions.
Representative Mariani.
Very quickly about the investment the state is making, how that's changed over the 2015.
Sure. Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair and Representative, the funding has unfortunately stayed pretty flat as well. The Office of Indian Education, prior to 2002, it actually managed the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program as well, and that was transitioned to the Office of Higher Education, and of course some of the staff members went along with them. So removal of the Indian Scholarship Program over to OHE, if you take that out of the equation, funding has essentially remained flat. We've had the same appropriations for the Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program, the same appropriations for the Tribal School Equalization Program, same appropriation for Success for the Future since that date forward.
Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Olson, of the 20,000 American Indian students in our state, how many of them attend a public school versus a contract school?
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, thank you. We have about 95%, 95.5% of our American Indian students in the state attending public school. Last data we had was 837 students in our Bureau of Indian Education funded schools, and that's split between the four.
Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you very much for that information. I think that, you know, puts the emphasis right here in K-12, which where it rightfully should be. Even though I have a contract school that I think does mighty good. I wish they had more students, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. Many of my students do attend Onamia and, of course, Isle as well. But in response to Representative Mariani's comments about what happened in 2000 and 2002, as I recall, Commissioner Jacks and the discussions that we had in our caucus with her, and I'm not sure what Senate was talking about, but I think she was hoping that the American Indian community would get a little bit more engaged instead of counting on the Commissioner of Education to be the director, that there would be more local engagement. That's what I remember from the conversation. And so, you know, placing the office in Roseville eventually was the decision that was made. Whether it was good or bad, I don't really know. I think we still had a pretty good presence in Bemidji, as I recall, at least through the college. But I think that it was, you know, a hope that all of the Indian communities would take a greater role in the education of the children and not rely so much on directive from the St. Paul office of the commissioner. Thank you.
A comment, Mr. Olson?
Or yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, thank you very much for those comments. We've actually had a phenomenal opportunity to consult with a body called the Tribal Nations Education Committee. And actually, the Tribal Nations Education Committee was born out of tribal initiative as a response to the sunset of the Indian Education Advisory Committee that the state had. Tribal leaders at the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe level, as well as the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council level, got together and endorsed representatives from each of the 11 tribal communities, as well as greater Minnesota communities and metro area communities, to fill that void. And so we actually work very closely with all the tribal nations now, and there has been a really good chance to work collaboratively together on initiatives.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, that's a good segue into the rest of my presentation, if you may allow me to move on, or we could take questions, but I just, my first slide is talking about kind of the tribal consultation over the last 4 years.
Yes, I've got two others on the list, and I think I'm just going to let those two members ask questions, and then we'll move to the rest year's next segment and then open it back up again. Representative Detmer.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifiers. I also serve on the state government finance, and we heard from the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council that that's the liaison between the 11 tribes. How much role do they play in supporting what you do in terms of education?
Mr. Olson or Commissioner?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. Yeah, we work very closely with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council as well. I, along with the Commissioner, when available, attend all of their quarterly meetings and provide updates on MDE initiatives. And we've been working collaboratively on projects as well, one of them being the Why Treaties Matter exhibit. That's been a collaboration between the Minnesota Humanities Center, Indian Affairs Council, and the National Museum of the American Indian, the Smithsonian Museum as well. And so there's countless opportunities like that. And I had mentioned the Tribal Nations Education Committee as well. Indian Affairs Council does participate in those meetings, and so we're all well connected together.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to our presenters. You have such significant growth the last 3 years, and we're hoping that will continue. But I'm wondering if you can attribute that to any particular program or initiative that you started in the last 3 years or not?
Mr. Olson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. I really attributed it, number one, I think, to the common goal that we have here. And we've really been able, through the rebuilding of the Office of Indian Education, provide consistent support and a consistent message once again from MDE to our communities and to our public school districts that have Indian education programs. But I feel as though there's a lot of different pieces to the puzzle. One I think that's been critical is the support provided by our regional centers of excellence that have worked really closely with our focus and priority schools. Many who have a high concentration or a high number of American Indian students, they've received boots-on-the-ground support through our regional centers of excellence, including specific support for American Indian students. And we've seen that needle move, I feel, as part of those puzzle pieces moving together.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, I think also with the data that we just presented as well, some of our Success for the Future programs are seeing a lot of success in their graduation rates at a greater proportion than our other schools that aren't getting that same kind of support by providing mentors, coaching, academic supports, and training for teachers in cultural relevance and language.
All right, so let's now move on to the rest of your presentation, discussion of the process and your recommendations.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, to get to your question and consultation, this first slide talks a little bit about the governor's commitment to American Indian education in consultation with tribal leaders and other key stakeholders, like the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, in convening and discussing the state of American Indian education. We have, for the past 4 years, taken a journey to rebuild trust and to really listen to the community about what is needed in order to come with these recommendations that we have before you today. So we held a listening session in 2011. It was the first time we convened large groups of our tribal leaders together, both in their educational offices within the 11 tribes, as well as chairmen and chairwomen and directors, to discuss what were the needs. Then in 2012, we held a governor's summit on Indian education. The governor came and presented at that summit. Language was added for consultation in 2013 that codified the TNEC and the Director of Education position. And then in 2013, the governor did an executive order requiring agencies to engage in tribal consultation and to be trained. And many of our MDE staff has been trained in consultation government to government. So then the governor asked me, after I presented some of this compelling data to him, he asked me to convene a consultation working group with tribal leaders over the past couple of months. And I've done that, and that's what you'll see today. And then we'll have some of the tribal leaders present right after me. Looks like our computer died, so I apologize for that. But I think you have PowerPoints in front of you. So the recommendations that are being brought forward today are, the first recommendation is recommendation about the Success for the Future program, which we've been talking about. In the governor's current recommendations before the working group, so we have the governor's recs that we presented, which were $4.5 million increase in providing additional support to 66 schools rather than 32 schools with the Success for the Future program, and expanding that program to all Title VII eligible schools. The working group, though, would like to take a step further. Because we have so many, and you saw that map that Dennis presented that was prepared by Fred from the Minnesota Rural Education Association, that showed that Minnesota Indian students are in so many of our schools that they have come with a recommendation to provide $7.5 million annually to support all districts and schools that enroll Indian students so that we can get this money out to those schools and the supports that they need in order to see the same kind of gains that those 32 schools are seeing. So that's the first recommendation. Recommendation two is specific to our BIE schools. This is specific, Representative Erickson, to those 837 students in those four federally run BIE schools. As you probably saw in the STRIB, you saw the condition of their facility at the Bug School and the deplorable conditions that those students go to in terms of the condition of that building. This does not have a recommendation for that. But what we uncovered was, I knew there was equalization aid, but I didn't know that there was a cap on our equalization aid. And so what we're not only seeing is that they go to a school that's that many of us would find very unacceptable for our own children, but they are also underfunded. So they're funded at about half of what any other Minnesota student is funded. Not only do we need to put pressure on our federal partners to ensure that they're completing their share and stepping up to their responsibility and their promises that they've made, but I think as Minnesotans, we have an obligation to these 837 kids, because every year we raise funding for all the rest of the million children in Minnesota. They don't see those same raises in their funding, and they don't have the dollars in which to buy technology, pay for their teachers, transportation, all the other general ed costs of operating a school building. And so you see that $2.23 million in funding year 16 and $2.76 million in funding year 17 to raise the cap of the equalization aid. Working group recommendation number three is to appropriate $1.6 million annually to create early childhood education in our tribal communities. This is for ECFE, which we supported in 2013, and so this is about supporting the tribes in Minnesota and having access to that. Recommendation four is looking at the appropriate and necessary funds to hold harmless our current funding levels for White Earth, Race to the Top Transformation Zone. As you know from the governor's recs, we are proposing that we continue to support our Northside Achievement Zone as well as our St. Paul Promise Neighborhood zones, and we want to be sure that we also hold harmless our students who are getting support at the White Earth Reservation. Recommendation number five is to examine the current Minnesota Charter School statute and create a provision to allow greater flexibility for our charter school boards in our tribal communities. Just because of the natural, community being smaller and the ability to be able to have sovereignty around the composition of their local school boards. Working group recommendation number six is to allow Minnesota to recognize additional alternative high school equivalency test options in addition to the GED. In much of our statute, we name specifically the vendor GED, but there are other high school equivalency tests in which folks could show competency to high school and earn their high school diploma through GED. Working group recommendation number seven is to amend the language in the Indian Education Act of 1988 to strengthen the roles and responsibilities of Indian Education Parent Advisory Committees, strongly emphasize school district accountability. If this body and the Senate and the governor all agree that this is dollars that we want to invest in now, then we would want to have some accountability to those dollars. So we are recommending that we do this through the world's best workforce. When I was here talking the other day about the new state accountability through world's best workforce, we're trying to get to a place where we have just one plan that school districts turn into the, actually they don't even turn in the plan, they turn in their summaries, but that this is a place where we can hold them accountable under the achievement gap portions of the world's best workforce and put in some requirements there that these Success for the Future dollars are used appropriately and that there are goals being set for the dollars and for the achievement of American Indian students and the graduation outcomes of American Indian students, and that we are providing funding for that, and that then school districts will be held accountable for that in their World's Best Workforce Plan. I'd like to now invite up Joan LaVoy, Education Director from White Earth Nation, Susan Wise, Commissioner of Education from the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, and Rocky Papasadora, from School Board Chair of the Bug School, and have them finish the presentation, and then we'd be glad to take your questions.
All right, thank you. All right, well, welcome, and I don't know who is going to lead off. Is it you, Ms. LaVoy?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So for each of you, just please state your name to identify yourselves, and then we proceed with your testimony whenever you're ready.
Buju, Joan LaVoy, Indigenous Kaz, Kawababi Ganikag, Ishkonikaning, Indunjaba, Waban, and Dayan, Makwa, Indun name. Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joan LaVoy. I'm the Director of Education for the White Earth Nation, and I am presenting the following testimony on behalf of Chairwoman Irma Visner. Irma is, today she's out in Washington, D.C., and she's working with other tribal leaders on the U.S. boarding school policy of 1869 that removed Indian children from their homes. All White Earth Nation education programs and schools strive to provide high-quality services and opportunities to our children from birth through post-secondary. It doesn't matter if a child is attending one of our schools, a child care or Head Start program, an ECFE program, or one of our 7 Boys and Girls Club sites. Our goal is to prepare our children for a lifetime of choices, not circumstances. In order to do this, I believe that the tribes in the state of Minnesota must continue to work together to strengthen and advance the educational experiences for all American Indian students, educators, and families. It is because of this that I am compelled to present this testimony to you today. The Tribal Nations Education Committee was endorsed by both the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe and the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council in 2007. The Tribal Nations Education Committee consists of representatives from each of the 11 tribes, representatives from the Twin Cities metro area and greater Minnesota, and a representative from the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe. Many of the TNEC members are here today. Each year, the Tribal Nation Education Committee prepares a position on education, which outlines priorities in Indian education from birth through post-secondary. And I believe you all were provided a copy of that today. We hope that you take time to read and use this as a guide to making a difference in Indian education in Minnesota. Minnesota was once a leader in Indian education. And by listening to our voices and working together, we can be that leader once again. Increased funding for early childhood programs is vital. Everyone here is aware of the impacts of investing in early childhood. Schools, programs, and agencies on White Earth provide services to approximately 500 children ages 0 to 5. We have another 250, I think it's closer to 300 children, not receiving any type of early childhood programming. And when you talk to our kindergarten teachers, they know which students which children come in either from a Head Start program or a 4-star rated child care program. We ask that you continue to support increased resources for early childhood programs, and specifically a new early childhood and tribal communities program. Funded by Minnesota's Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge Grant, the White Earth Early Learning Scholarship Program was designed to ensure that children and families on our reservation have access to high-quality early learning and development care by bridging funding gaps and decreasing barriers to success. The scholarships were designed to cover the cost of early childhood education, child care, reaching the most at-risk children and families, giving children the opportunities to be kindergarten ready. To date, we have given scholarships to 168 children, impacting 118 families. 65 of those children will be without a scholarship as of December 31st, 2015. We ask you to support the necessary funds to hold harmless our current funding level for the White Earth Early Learning Scholarship Program. And you also receive today a four-page brochure which outlines our program, what we've been able to do with that, and there are some success stories in there as well, and I believe they are very compelling. Minnesota American Indian students have the highest dropout rate in the nation and the largest achievement gap in comparison to white students in the state. This is not acceptable. The state of Minnesota must support our schools, teachers, students, and families to increase the achievement rate and outcomes for our Indian students. Minnesota's Success for the Future program is the only state-funded initiative that specifically targets and addresses the needs of American Indian students. The only initiative that addresses the needs of Indian children is currently a competitive grant. Eligible schools must apply for these funds, and even though they all need the funds to meet the unique needs of American Indian children, only half of them, or just under half, receive the funds. The other half have to wait for 5 years for a chance to apply. Of the 9 eligible school districts on or very near White Earth Reservation, 4 were awarded this last cycle. We ask that you support increased funding for the Success for the Future program and making it a formula-driven grant for all eligible districts. The Minnesota Department of Education revised the academic content of the Adult Basic Education program in Minnesota through the decision to contract with Pearson VUE Testing Service for the provision of GED testing throughout the state. The new testing program is known as GED 2014. Since its implementation in January of 2014, there has been a dramatic decrease in the learner participation at all White Earth adult education study sites. 5 years prior to the GED 2014, we had 199 GED graduates. That's approximately 40 per year. Since the change to the GED 2014, we have had 0 graduates. That's a 100% decline. Through our sovereign authority, on October 6, 2014, the White Earth Reservation Tribal Council passed resolution number 038-14007, adopting a HISET exam. It was determined that the HISET is an upgrade from the GED 2002, is much more affordable, and is recognized by the United States Department of Education, and is currently utilized in 11 other states. The question that remains to be answered, will our students who take and pass the HISET then qualify for federal financial aid or the Pell Grant? It is our request that the state of Minnesota adopt the HISET either in lieu of or in addition to the GED 2014 testing program in order for all Minnesota students to be Pell eligible. Lastly, I want to talk about the Bureau schools. Circle of Life Academy is a K-12 BIE school just on the outskirts of the White Earth Village. We have 130 students attending from across the reservation. Our school is underfunded, but we still look for creative and innovative ways to help our students succeed. Total per pupil funding for BIE students is under $5,000. In comparison, per pupil funding for students in Minnesota's public schools is $10,000, or $13,000 for students in Minneapolis. Our BIE students must be funded and treated equally. I am asking that you support an increase in the tribal equalization formula so we can provide the same opportunities and learning environments and students and teachers are afforded in schools throughout the state. Miigwech.
Thank you.
Puju. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Suzanne Wise, and I am the Commissioner of Education for the Mille Lacs Band. Melanie Benjamin, our chief executive, is also in Washington, D.C. today, so I'm here on her behalf. The Mille Lacs Band is committed to providing high-quality, culturally-centered educational programming and services to its tribal members, from early education through high school and on to post-secondary education. We operate three schools on reservation land. The Wewanubi Early Education Center, which opened in 2012 and is named after our former Mille Lacs Band Chief Executive, Art Garbo, who some of you may remember. The building was constructed to incorporate the latest renewable energy standards and environmentally friendly features. The Neosheng Lower School and High School in Onamia provides K-12 education to tribal members. We have 210 students at Neosheng. There is also a charter school operated in the Mille Lacs Reservation called Minisinaquan Leadership Academy near McGregor, Minnesota. Mille Lacs Band families also have the option of sending their children to local public schools. The band has strong working relationships with many of the schools, and we even provide staffing in terms of support. Our Nigan Youth Program, which is similar to what some tribes have, a Boys and Girls Club, is our version of that, and our Nigan group goes into the public schools and works, whether that be handling a recess or tutoring and just really building a strong relationship with the students in those schools. Our model for that is an Isle public school, which Representative Erickson had talked about earlier within her district. In Isle, our Nigan youth group goes directly into the school. The school has given them a room to operate out of, and the rates for those children have gone up just because of those staff being in that school. As a member of the Tribal Nations Education Committee, and in my capacity as the Commissioner of Education for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, I'm here to offer this testimony and support for the following. Increasing funding for the Success for the Future, the state's Indian Education Program. Lifting the $1,500 cap on per pupil funding in the Bureau of Indian Education Tribal School Equalization Program. Creating and funding a new early education in tribal communities program. Creating a provision in statute to allow for greater flexibility for boards of charter schools operating in tribal communities. Amending the language in the Indian Education Act of 1988 to strengthen the roles and responsibilities of Indian Education Parent Advisory Committees. Madam Chair and committee members, there is very convincing evidence that high-quality, cultural-centered early education experiences give American Indian children the tools they need to be ready for kindergarten. It is the framework for children to develop strong foundational cognitive skills, develop social and emotional competence, and to establish patterns of engagement in school and learning. Greater investment in early education programming is essential to improve educational outcomes for American Indian children. The Tribal Nations Education Committee remains dedicated to our mission to strengthen, protect, and advance the overall educational experience and opportunities for all American Indian children and their families and their communities. Thank you for your opportunity to address this committee. Miigwech bizindawye.
Thank you, Ms. Wise. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Rocky Papasadora. I'm the school board chairman for the Bugganegijik School. located in Bena, Minnesota on the Leech Lake Indian Reservation. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today about the educational concerns faced by Bureau of Indian Education, BIE, tribal schools like ours. Today I would like to focus my comments on per pupil funding in the BIE school equalization formula. Many of you may be aware of the funding discrepancy between BIE schools and public schools in Minnesota. As stated by the Commissioner of Education earlier this year, Brenda Casilius, the average per pupil funding is $10,000 in the state of Minnesota. Accordingly, the average per pupil funding for students attending BIE schools in Minnesota is $5,000. Currently, the state has a $1,500 funding cap per BIE student in Minnesota. Though the funding is greatly appreciated, a significant financial disparity continues to exist between public schools and BIE tribal schools. In response to the disparity, I am advocating on behalf of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe for the state of Minnesota to appropriate the $2.23 million in fiscal year 2016 and $2.76 million in fiscal year 2017 to fund students who attend BIE tribal schools by readjusting the per pupil funding formula. If these dollars were secured through legislation, it would lead the way for a just and equitable education for all Minnesota students. As the chairperson for the BIE Tribal School, I am aware of the educational and social inequities and injustices that our students, community, and school staff face. For instance, our annual budget is contingent upon federal appropriations, which are unpredictable. This directly impacts our ability to plan. Yet despite the unique circumstances that our school confronts, we are one of the few schools that offer a great culture and language program to all of our students. Students and their families who choose to attend the Bukanigijik School are assured that they will learn Ojibwe traditions, culture, history, and the language. Our staff that chose to work at the school is assured family membership. And as chairperson, I am assured that the Ojibwe culture and language will live forever. And our Native American students will be equipped with essential knowledge and skills to survive in the 21st century. In conclusion, our Bukanigijik School students should have equal access to highly qualified administrators and teachers, reliable technology, and a safe and secure school without having to compromise their right to a quality education due to the lack of funding. Therefore, I am supporting increasing per pupil funding in the BIE Tribal School Equalization Formula. Thank you ever so much, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Papasidora, and to all of our testifiers. We appreciate your comments. I am starting a list, and first up is Representative Prisha.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. I wrote this question down because I want to make sure I get this correct. I appreciate everything you've added. And let me give a little bit of background. As I've been working on the Child Protection Task Force for children and maltreatment, we've heard a lot from the American Indians and the need for the culture, and I absolutely believe all that. I mean, it's all fantastic what we're trying to do and be sensitive to this. So I want to make sure I get this question right, and please let me know if I do it the wrong way. But when you talk about culturally sensitive or culturally centered curriculum, I just want you to help me understand the extent of this approach. What I'm trying to get to, and what I think I've heard you say, is the educational outcomes and the family outcomes in families and raising kids is very closely tied to your culture. And can you help me understand what that means? Is that just embedding language, family values, spiritualism, and history into the curriculum to get those outcomes? How is that all intertwined, if that makes sense?
Well, I can
Ms.
share
Wise.
With you, Suzanne Wise. A typical day at our reservation school, Neosheng School, is in the morning, all the children put tobacco down, and they do that as an offering. And they're asking Manidu, who we call God, for help. And during the course of the day, they're working with a culturally sensitive staff. Not all of our teachers are Native. And so a lot of training goes into that in terms of helping our staff to be culturally sensitive to the students. When we say culturally, a culturally centered program, every student at our school also gets an hour of Ojibwe language and culture daily. We've been adding more lesson planning in terms of how to put the culture into math, how to put it into science, how to put it into English. We have a lot of, any type of, we have a curriculum developer who also works with our staff to make sure they're adding bits and pieces of our culture throughout. And I come from a social work background as well. So I did actually do child protection at Mille Lacs for quite a few years. And the one thing I can tell you is that our children want to succeed as well. That's what all of us want for all of our kids, is for our kids to be successful. In coming at it from a child welfare to an education, is people will learn better in their own environment. And that is just to say with any of us, I mean, any one of us sitting here, when we're surrounded by people who we feel comfortable with and who we feel empowered by, or we feel good, we're going to become engaged in our surroundings. And it's the same with our Native children in our schools. I would welcome any of you who is interested to come. Once a month, we do a pipe and dish at Neosheng School. Representative Erickson, you're in our area. I would like you to come up sometime, too, and enjoy watching the children. They do the pipe. They do the dish. So when you talk about empowerment of our students do not have to feel the effects of historical trauma that, some recent reports came out that our Native children suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder the same as someone coming back from the war. That is how our children feel. And so with looking at all of this data, we need to have our tribal schools be the strongest education system for us. And for us at Mille Lacs, I don't just handle the schools, I also handle our scholarship program, our Nigan youth program, which is the version of Boys and Girls Club, and Nigan means forward. We hit a lot of kids throughout the day, and that's not just in our tribal schools, but we also work with the public schools. Like I said, we have a very good working relationship with IELTS. That's our model Nigan group. Every one of our staff people has a four-year degree working with our youth in that area. It's right away they hit on tutoring as soon as they get off the buses from the public schools. And they work on an hour for tutoring, and then after that they do fun activities, and we also do activity nights two times a month where we invite families to come. But when you talk about that, in our public schools there's issues that, I mean, you guys would need us here all day to start talking about some of the issues that our Indian students face in some of the public schools. And when everything we're talking about today is we just want our kids to be successful. That's what everybody wants. So I think when we can come together on the things that we have in common and the things that we want, that's where we need to be.
Representative Krishna.
And thank you for that, and thank you, Madam Chair. And just as a follow-up, that was wonderful, very helpful, and I've enjoyed getting to know more about your efforts. Just by a quick point of intersection, 10 years ago, you had a superintendent or so, George Weber, who
yes.
I worked very closely with the peers, so I've been to your school, and so this is very helpful. And so just keep up the good work, and hopefully we can find more options.
Madam Chair, if
Mr.
I may.
Olson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative, I just wanted to follow up on that question with what I feel is a pretty powerful example of the importance of culturally based education. I had mentioned, and there had been questions about the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, and I had mentioned an exhibit called Why Treaties Matter. That exhibit is actually touring Blandin Foundation service areas in northern Minnesota. It's also touring all of our Minsky institutions. It's a panel exhibit that talks about the history of treaties here in Minnesota and what our tribal nations have gone through to get to where they are today and the relevance. The Why Treaties Matter program actually has some educator guides attached to it that were piloted in a couple of school districts here, tied closely to our recently adopted social studies standards, our 2011 social studies standards that have a lot of additional content about teaching about American Indians here in Minnesota, about tribal sovereignty, about tribal government structure. And during this pilot, some ninth graders in one of the metro suburban school districts were surveyed. And ninth graders, both Indian and non-Indian, went through these educator guides and through the exhibit, and the most powerful comments came out of these students. Some non-Indian students said, "Wow, I had no idea. I thought Indians were extinct." And others that said, "I feel so incredibly robbed that this information wasn't part of my educational experience." And so when we look at neighboring states like the state of Montana that have adopted Indian education for all policies, showing not only that teaching Indian history, Indian culture and language is important to Indian students, but it's important for all of us to know. And so those are initiatives that we're trying to mirror, because at the same time those non-Indian students were feeling robbed that this wasn't a part of their educational experience, you also had American Indian students that for many times the first time felt proud of who they were, because they for the first time saw themselves reflected in those curricular activities, and students were coming up saying, "I am happy to say that I'm Indian now. I never wanted to say that prior." And so if this can happen in a suburban school district through a pilot, imagine what this information could be done shared throughout the state.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really love Representative Krishna's question. Thank you for asking it and for the conversation that happened. Some will probably recall, and Representative Krishna, you were on the committee last year, that we passed the LEAPS Act dealing with English language learners. And one of the things that we did in that massive redesign of our approach there was to provide a statutory definition for culturally appropriate skills that we expect out of our education systems. And the way I like to think about it, I don't remember our exact words, really is that it's really as simple as making sure that our system, everyone in it, possesses the relationships with, possesses the skills to build relationships with students based on who those students are, because our students are all different. But furthermore, it's more than that. It's building those relationships for achieving our state's stated academic outcomes that are embedded in our standards and are embedded in our world's best workforce goals. So this is more than just, you know, getting to know students. This is getting to be able to build relationships with students for the very explicit purpose of achieving high academic rigor. And all the social science, of course, is telling us, you know, that young people who feel good about who they are, who see themselves affirmed, tend to be students who achieve well. And quite frankly, historically, Madam Chair, both liberals and conservatives, I think, have been guilty on this issue, because we've tended to approach our relationship with our diverse students as, we got to fix them, we got to fix these, you know, whether you're a liberal or conservative, we got to fix these people because they're different. And now we understand the incredible damage that has caused. And so this isn't about fixing. This is about acknowledging strengths that already really do exist in all of these communities. But that's not my question. my question is, I presume that the several recommendations are embedded in the recommendations that the governor has proposed in his budget. I'm assuming that's the case. Correct me if I'm wrong. I do want to say that all the years I've been here, this is probably the most comprehensive, really research-based, smart, you know, set of recommendations that have come forward from these many communities on this. So I assume that's the case. But very specifically, one of them speaks to the need for an alternative to the GED. And there was mentions a reference to the HISET test. One of the things we did last year is we redesigned the adult diploma in our state. And so I'm wondering whether or not the group has had the opportunity to look at, it's brand new, I get it, had an opportunity to look at our redesign parameters around the adult diploma. Part of it was in response to the GED, what's happened to it, and I agree. I think the GED has just, you know, become something that is just, you know, it's just not workable, not just here, but all across the nation for all sorts of students. So I'm just wondering whether you've had the opportunity to look at that and whether that might not offer opportunities, or do you still think that we need to advance legislation to complement whatever we did last year?
Mr. Olson, you want to take that?
Yeah, sure, Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, thank you for the question. And I'll defer to the testimony, particularly of Ms. Lavoie, who demonstrated real impact within the White Earth Nation community around the changes to the GED. I will say that in mentioning prior the Tribal Nations Education Committee, I'm actually appointed a representative to the pilot project of the rollout for the adult diploma. And so you're right, it is extremely new. And we are piloting that right now, and that is definitely going to be a good option, I think, in the future for a lot of our tribal communities. And we have had some tribal representation on those pilot rollouts, but we're just now scratching the surface with it. Until then, we've seen an incredibly impactful trough, particularly in our American Indian communities and tribal communities. So I don't know if you have anything else to add.
Ms. Lavoie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I do just want to add that, you know, the adult diploma is definitely something that will be a great addition or alternative or a choice for our adult learners. But I also want to emphasize, as Dennis did, that that's just in the pilot stage right now. And in order for us to continue impacting a high number of adult learners on an annual basis, we need to have another alternative. It is going to take. It's hard to change is hard. So when we bring in and start implementing the adult diploma statewide, it's going to take time for our learners to adapt to that and see that as a viable option. So during that time, we also need them to be able to go through the same. Something very familiar to them so that they don't just shut the door and give up. So, yes, down the road, I do see the adult diploma as being very, very valuable. But in the meantime, we do need to look at other options. Thank you.
Thank you. Did Ms. White or Mr. Papasador, did you wish to comment on that? Or okay. Representative Mariani, do you have anything additional?
Madam Chair, I always have lots of things to discuss, but other members have things they want.
Thank you. My list is growing. I appreciate that. Representative Mullery. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Papasador. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Committee members. You know, coming from a law enforcement background, one thing you talk about the culture and the traditions, spirituality and the language. I look at it from a different point of view at the same time. The education is number one, but just as strong to help our children fight the gang problems that everybody has in one district or another. We teach our children to instill and to get an Indian name if they don't have one, to go through the ceremony, versus having a street name as a gang member does. We have storytelling for all ages at the school. And that talks about loyalty, integrity, and being a brave, and being a strong grandmother of a tribe over the years. Versus listening to the rap music that has nothing but criminal elements in it, if you listen to the words. Wear feathers, regalia. We have powwows all the time at the school. Versus having the rags that identify you to some gang on the street. The language. We want them to learn the Ojibwe language. Versus having some type of street talk or street code that reflects them with some gang out there. I just feel that if we teach the children this and bring this into their lives, that this is going to help them on the education level as well as succeeding in being somebody who's going to help somebody else that's going to try to get recruited by the criminal elements out there. I wanted to add that in there because I that's just coming from a law enforcement point of view, but I instill that with education.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate your comments on that very much. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions. First of all, and maybe Mr. Strom can answer better than others. A friend of mine taught on Red Lake for a few years, and she told me that it was really hard to get teachers to stay there, that the living conditions and just what went on there. And she was saying that what happens is I noticed there's nobody from Red Lake testifying today. She said even teachers at other reservations talked about, or on schools near reservations talked about, how much harder it was to get teachers to stay there. Have we ever considered adding specifically to someplace like that, that it's so that we can get teachers that aren't just coming out and learning the craft to stay in someplace like that? Has there ever been a thought of giving extra money so that they get a bump in salary for something like that, or does that get too controversial or something?
So, Mr. Strom, I think he's wondering if there's been initiatives introduced or considered.
I just
considered.
Wondered the background of if there'd ever been any kind of. He seems to have been here forever and knows everything about this.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, to my knowledge, we've not had a part of our school funding formula that specifically recognizes tenure in a particular district for a particular a district or group of districts. Some number of years ago, about 20 years ago, we used to have a part of the formula that was called training and experience revenue. And that revenue paid additional, relatively small amounts of additional money to school districts based on the training and experience of their teachers. So under that formula, a district would have been rewarded to have an experienced staff staying, but it wasn't a benefit to an individual teacher or an individual staff person there. It was a district-wide recognition of more tenure and at that site. So in terms of any programs that are designed to encourage staff to stay at a particular school, I'm not aware of any funding formulas through the K-12 system that have done that for our public schools.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And
of course, according to her, it wasn't the district that was the problem. It was they just couldn't afford to pay enough to keep a teacher who had experience that other places wanted. And to pay him a premium to be there. My second question was, Ms. I think it's, is it pronounced Wise?
Wise.
Wise, okay. I know that I've been to the McGregor School, and I know they have a really outstanding program there, especially their early learning and for 3 and 4, now they're opening up, I guess, next year to 0 to 3? Pardon?
6 weeks old.
Yours does?
Early start, yes.
Oh, okay. And I know, and I don't know the test results from your school, so I just was, I know your school is right just down the road practically from here. I guess I was wondering if, and maybe your school is doing expanded, most of the charters at least in my district are not doing as well as the public schools. And I was wondering if there was a lot of talk about culture needed, and since they were so close, if the grades and testing and stuff, and maybe that's not true in your case, but at least in some of the charter schools around, whether there could be a pairing of going to the public school that's doing well and having part of the day at the Native American school to get to bring in all the culture and things like that. And the reason I was especially thinking of that on charter school, a friend of mine, John DeBerry, is a senator in Memphis and African American, and he's kind of the poster guy that goes around the country talking for charter schools. But he told me if charter schools aren't doing appreciably better than the public schools, that they shouldn't continue. Now, in his state, they do much better, and of course, I believe Commissioner Casilius was there for a while. But he said that while some of them argue that they're doing better culture, but he thought that it would be better to have them going to the better performing public school and getting the culture in a conjunction type of thing. I just kind of wondered, and maybe that doesn't apply to your particular school.
Ms. Wise. Yeah, and I'm sorry, can I get both of you to speak into the microphone because it's difficult to hear.
Sure. I'll just give you a quick background on Minisinaquan. Several years ago, the Mille Lacs Band, we're kind of spread out. We have our District 1 in Mille Lacs, right on the lake. Then we have Isle, which is on the other side of the lake, is District 2A. And then we have an area in McGregor, which is District 2. And then way over by Hinckley, all the way to by Danbury, is our District 3. So we have areas of Mille Lacs that are very spread out. So when we wanted to open up an education system throughout all of our districts, we immediately thought of expanding Neosching School, our BIE school, to have a satellite program there. But because there's a moratorium on the opening of new sites for BIE, that wasn't an option for us. So the next option was charter. And so that's how Minisinaquan came. And the one thing with Minisinaquan is it's a very strong community traditionally in that East Lake community. And it is a very strong, culturally appropriate school. And also, they have been doing wonderful in their scores. And, of course, all of their scores, we have struggles, too, in all of our schools. Truancy is a big issue. Kids can't learn if they're not there. We recently started within our own education system to work on those issues. And we've already been seeing a turnaround in just the time we've started having team meetings about truancy, where we've added our tribal law enforcement, we've added our tribal court, we've added our health and human services. So, you know, as a tribe, we do a lot of things to be proactive. And in looking at the charter schools, it ideally that's not what we had wanted. We did want to be an extension of Neosching. Neosching does have struggles as well. Our testing, we would like it to be higher. Of course, everybody wants their testing scores to be higher, but not at the detriment of our Ojibwe language and culture. So our children, you know, if you're unfamiliar with that, like I said, I'd welcome any of you to come and join us and to spend the day with us or even an afternoon or whatever at one of our schools and see firsthand.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got connected with School Board Chair Pastor Adora on some of your comments there. You know, really what we're trying to build here in any school, and whether it's suburban or urban or a tribal school or outstate school, is our future leaders. And one thing I've got 34 years experience as an educator and a coach, retired, but one thing I always noticed when students were having problems in school, that I'd usually try to get a hold of the parents right away. And nothing was discussed today about families and parents. What's being done to engage parents in the school atmosphere and supporting the schools? I think that's to me, that's always was a big thing, was if I was having problems with a student, I would usually bring the parent in right away, and things usually would be resolved, or I found out that's why there's a problem. So anybody could answer that question. Thank you.
Mr. Papasador, do you want to take a crack at that one?
Remember that. Correct. The parents are involved definitely with the children's behavior and what happens at the school. And we have a position where we've hired somebody that goes out exactly and visits with the parents to share with them, because we know that the parents can't always come in. Beach Lake has got a boundary line that involves 1,050 square miles. I heard somebody talking about the area span and the transportation issues, and a lot of our families don't have that transportation available to them. So we do go out and visit with them, and we do have the family nights once a month, and we invite the children, or the family and children in. We have the powwows that take place, and we visit with the children. And we do try to instill, I'll go back to culture again and tradition. I know that many of our grandfathers were chiefs on our reservation. I think somebody talked about one today. And that same bloodline that ran through their blood in their hearts is the same blood that's running through ours in our children. And I also come from when you talk about sports, boxing and professional boxing. I got a brother that grew up on Franklin Avenue. I mean, that's where many of the Indian children down here came from. And I mean, how many times do you see a young Indian boy growing up on Franklin Avenue grow up and get into the sport of boxing, excuse me, and beat a three-time world champion, Wilfred Benitez, in Canada? That goes to show that we can be somebody, and we are somebody. But we instill that into our kids, the winning of this. You're talking about sports. I'm sure that's your background, some of it. It teaches them how to sportsmanship, how to lose and come back and win the next time around, and how to represent your tribe. My brother fought and state champion, and he's always represented either the city of Minneapolis or the Leech Lake Reservation Boxing Club. We've gone all over the United States and did that. We still do it today with our children, our youth. I mean,
Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I just want to mention the areas within the recommendations where we do actually intentionally speak to the role of families. One is in our ECFE ask and early childhood and working with families around that. Our Success for the Future, often those programs engage families and family liaisons. Also, our World's Best Workforce requires stakeholder engagement and hearings that include families. And then our parent councils and working, that's a specific recommendation actually, is to work with our parent councils and to strengthen our parent council consultation.
At Mille Lacs, when we have family activity night at Wewanubi Head Start, it is packed. We have 200 to 300 people who come and attend our events. So, and we also have parent committees too in every one of the public schools that has Mille Lacs Band children, and we offer assistance to those parent committees
Ms. LeBoy?
Yes, I just want to add just a couple of comments to that. And with our Race to the Top, our Early Learning Challenge Grant, a key to that was designed to empower families to take an active leadership role in the education of their children. That was key. We hold classes monthly in each of our communities and bringing parents in and helping to empower them to take charge of their children's education and to build that relationship between parents and schools. There continues to be a lack of trust with our parents and the school systems because so many of our parents have not graduated or had bad experiences. So we work really hard at that. One other thing that we are doing, and I know the Fond du Lac Tribal School is having great success with that, and we are also going implementing the Check and Connect program at the Circle of Life Academy. That program is a mentoring program where we pair up a mentor within the community and or our tribal organization with a child, and it's not only a mentor for that child, but it's somebody to connect with the parents. So you have somebody that's from the outside of the school making that strong connection and encouraging them to get involved or helping them overcome the barriers to involvement. So that is a proven program, and we hope to see the success at White Earth that they have seen at Fond du Lac. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Mansells.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, want to thank the testifiers for coming down to share with the committee what the real world is like with regard to Native American education. But I actually have a short question for Mr. Olson. Mr. Olson, I appreciate your work, and I appreciate everything that you do. My concern is, as a member who represents a number of public schools near the reservation, all of which I spend time in, physically, in the buildings, I come away wondering if I am a Native parent of a Native student, when we choose to send our son or daughter to the public school in close proximity to the reservation, as a parent, can I be assured that there is a somewhat standardized approach to curriculum that is tailored or sensitive or connected with the Native student? Can I be assured as a parent that my son or daughter is going to be educated in a manner that meets their unique needs as a Native person? Now, I say that, or I ask that question, because when I go to my schools, I see signs of sensitivity. I see symbols of sensitivity, but I'm concerned about the instruction. I'm concerned about the teaching. I'm concerned about what goes on in those classrooms, strategies and techniques that I would want to be tailored toward my son or daughter who happens to be Native. I hope I've not been too long-winded.
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair and Representative Vanzels, thank you for the question. I will lead off by, I guess, remembering a and it wasn't that long ago, a presentation I did last week in the Grand Rapids area, actually, with the Itasca Area Schools Collaborative.
That's a really good place to go.
I thought so. And I was in a room with over 500 educators, actually, and we talked specifically about supports for Indian students in schools, and it's primarily an audience of non-Indian teachers. And I said, first and foremost, every one of the public schools, like you had alluded to, Representative, have Indian education professionals and staff within those buildings. And I listed out resources for educators within those buildings to utilize. And I said, number one should be those Indian education staff people. They are, and I know Indian people don't like to refer to themselves as experts, but they are the experts. And many of them are in the room and can attest to the countless hours they put in helping teachers and helping other school staff help students feel comfortable and help make curriculum modifications and help get community involved and kind of put all of those necessary pieces together to serve Indian students in a good way. I will say right now, in terms of standardization, I had mentioned earlier our 2011 social studies standards, which provide great opportunities, I think, and for the first time, in-depth conversations about and teaching standards and benchmarks about American Indians in Minnesota, not only historical perspective, but all the way through through current times and contemporary Indian issues. That's been a part of the conversation, I think, that's been missing and a part of the story. I'll also highlight another piece of statute that says, you know, the commissioner must incorporate or make considerations for or contributions from Minnesota American Indian tribes and communities in all standards review processes. And so as the standards review schedule comes up for different content areas, we'll now see contributions of our tribes and communities represented in all content areas, whether it be math or so. Social studies will no longer be the final landing place for a lot of this content. And we're hoping, as I had mentioned earlier with the Why Treaties Matter exhibit, that this is beneficial information for all students, Indian or non-Indian.
Representative Ansels.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Mr. Olson, that's fine. But again, I'm trying to zero in, focus in on, do you think that those lofty platitudes are actually occurring? Can parents be confident that those things are happening? And I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot because, well, maybe I should, but I'll leave it at that.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative, if I may, a couple of pieces I think of important legislation that may help kind of frame this. Number one is that with the question about parent involvement, our state statutes as well as the federal statutes mandate that any school district that enrolls 10 or more American Indian students must form an Indian Education Parent Advisory Committee. And those committees are incredibly strong, are incredibly important in some of our communities. But Representative Ansels, what you're alluding to in terms of a standardization, we're not there yet. I'll be quite honest. We have over 180 school districts in the state that enroll at least 10 or more American Indian students. Of those we talked about earlier, 32 we actually support with state Indian education dollars. Of those 180, about 66 to 70 receive federal Indian education support. That leaves the other two-thirds that really aren't accessing or even attempting to access appropriate services for their Indian students in their district, and all with 10 students or more are eligible. We're not talking building level, we're talking at a school district level. So, you know, certainly a big piece of that has been our capacity in the Office of Indian Education not being able to get out and provide that information and that training and technical assistance to create some continuity, mainly because there's been one to two staff people for the last 10 plus years.
That was very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, testifiers, for your very proud and passionate testimony. I must confess that I share a little bit of your pride in that I need to tell a little story here. I've spent a lot of time around Mille Lacs and Leech Lake area, and it maybe started, it did start back in the 1950s. And although I was a very small boy, 6 or 7 years old, I asked with curiosity of my father what those people were doing on the west shore of Lake Mille Lacs back in the very late 1950s. And there were wigwams there in November, and people were syrping, and or not so much syrping in the fall, but they were smoking whitefish from the lake. And it sparked a curiosity and an interest that went on a little bit later when I was 12 years old and able to go deer hunting. We stopped to get gasoline, and my dad asked me, "Did you bring a book to read in the deer stand?" And I said, "No." And while we were in that gas station, they had the little circular things with paperbacks, and the very first book I ever bought with my own money was on the Ojibwe people of Minnesota. And over the last 50 years, I've assembled quite a library and an interest in all Native American peoples around the country, but particularly in Minnesota. And so with that, I share your pride. I have an appreciation of what your effort and your cause has been. Spending a lot of time around there, before I ask my question, I was wondering if you could translate what Bugganonegashig and Nayashing means. Is there a translation that can be understood in the Anglo-Saxon world?
Mr. Papasadora.
Come on, Commander Chair. Bugganonegashig is a hole in the day. I know that. I can't tell you that the meaning behind it or anything, but as far as translation.
And Ms. Wise?
Nayashing is our place, but if you want an interpretation, I'll ask my friend Ricky White for one.
Oh, Ricky White.
Would you I'm sorry, I need to have you come down to the table and into the microphone so we can capture it. Thank you, and just state your name for the record.
Ricky White.
Thank you.
Niganakut, Dijnikas, Piju and Dotem, Not Kumiguaning, Shkunigando and Jeba, Misugeget, Yan Schnabeg Maganamatibeat, Chinandagazuk Segia, Nanagatanimigom and Schnabeg Agishamine going, Kajan Schnabe Engusha, Minke is it the mink, or Nogum Gazak seating. Quite a long translation. Madam Chair, representatives,
yes,
the language that I just spoke to you and what you're asking about is an original language that was used likely in rooms like this by our ancestors, whom negotiated and talked to your ancestors in government and wondered about the education of our young ones, what that's going to look like. Nayashing is an area of the land in Mille Lacs, describing that area in that corner where there's rice fields, where there's swampland, where there's just an area where we want to designate where learning is going to happen.
And so the other translation you said was Hole in the Day, and that was Chief Hole in the Day from Little Falls area?
Again, we recognize the people that come before us. We recognize those forefathers, those grandmothers who whispered these stories in our ears, whom, like Chief Bugganonegashig, Bugganea is the whole, Gijik is the day. These people that laid the foreground for how we are, and these people are leaving us. And when they leave, they take everything with them. Kajanishnabeing, how we are as people, they take with them. And what you have before you in these legislative presentations as far as dollars and resources is to help reignite that, to capture those things that are leaving us every day. Mishkub Abed just left Mille Lacs, left, and the family fought to have that body be returned before an autopsy because that is how we do it in our people.
So now to my question about the resources. Thank you, Madam Chair. So over the last 55 years, I've seen a lot of changes and seen a lot of improvements, and certainly have found myself defending treaty rights against some of my contemporaries. But so I've seen the tribal gaming operations rise from many of the areas around the state,
And I was wondering if you could comment on how these tribal gaming operations are contributing to the education of your children, if at all, and if so, what the budgets might be.
Mr. Olson?
Madam Chair and Representative, if I may, I hope I can speak for everybody here and say that none of us are gaming professionals or gaming attorneys or Indian law attorneys for that. We are we're educators, but I will speak on behalf of gaming revenue and what it has been able to provide to communities that primarily had nothing up until recently. Gaming compacts and federal mandates determine how those dollars are utilized, and a majority of those dollars are utilized for community infrastructure, hospitals, school buildings, community centers, youth centers, elder housing, and all of those are put together in a package from gaming revenues. And many of you, you know, who represent Greater Minnesota understand that gaming certainly hasn't been, Indian gaming hasn't been the boon that maybe we read about in the newspapers with those areas closer here to the metro area. And so there's wide disparity in gaming revenue and what's able to be utilized. But I can just tell you that Ms. Wise spoke of the early childhood building that was built in Mille Lacs, an incredible commitment, an incredible resource in the area, and that was all done with tribal gaming revenue. As a way to help bring that equity and equality as much as tribes can. But certainly we all here in this room understand that we have a responsibility as a state as well to meet those needs first.
Okay. All right. I have two others on the list, and I want to give those two members, Representative Quam and Representative Murphy, a chance to ask questions. So, and we are at 2:30, so I'll ask that the questions be brief, and if everyone will hold tight, we may go just a couple minutes over. So, Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, Miigwech. And I do appreciate community and family and what it means, the difference to the schools, but looking through your recommendations, if I'm looking at it right, recommendation one is about $600 per student. Recommendation two is an additional $3,000 per student to $4,500 per student. Is that additional to the $5,000, or is that, you know, that was confusing. Three appeared to be $1,000 per child. And then I had some concerns about when you're talking with the younger children. I did an extrapolation of the total enrollment population divided by 13 was about the population per year, and that then you'd only have, if it was everyone pre-K, it'd be about 250, or is it just a you know, 1 4-year-olds for 1,000 per? You know, I'm trying to understand the ask and the funding so we can total it up. So if you can expound a little bit more on what the actual dollars are on that recommendations.
Mr. Olson.
And Madam Chair and Representative Qualm, thank you for the questions. Really briefly, I will just say on recommendation two, you heard Commissioner Casilius talk about the wide funding disparity. The $5,000 or some odd dollars that are appropriated per pupil in the BIE system includes our state equalization formula paired with federal dollars. And you can see there's still quite a disparity there, which is why you might come up with additional dollars. And Brenda, I don't know if you wanted to jump in.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Quam. The recommendation two is to lift the cap so that we could equalize to what the average is across the state. And that would be for all, it would be on a per pupil for all 837. The additional $7.5 million annually to support all districts is for districts greater than 20 students. And then they would get, I think it's just a little bit over $400 for concentration. This is, Fred's been pushing me on that concentration for poverty, because what we've pulled, the data that we've pulled recently, because we're looking at also teacher equity, is the 20 poorest districts in the state, 41% of the population is American Indian. So of our all of our districts, out of all 385 or 485 districts and charters, the top 20 highest poverty districts have nearly half of the students in them are American Indian. So that's the support to get more money out to schools that have over 20. Did you say recommendation 3 as well? I can't remember. I know it was 1 and 2.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Recommendation 3 was the early child, and it came out to about, if it was $1,000 per child, if it was just for the 4-year-olds, but it'd be like $250. So I wondered if it was aimed at like a scholarship, or was it across the entire pool?
Mr. Olson.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Quam. Yeah, thank you for the question. This is specific to early childhood family education and parent engagement activities locally controlled tribally. So this would be an opportunity for tribes to own the dollars to provide early childhood family education activities in partnership, encouraging partnership with local school districts who also operate ECFE dollars or ECFE programs, excuse me.
Thank you. And Representative Murphy, last question today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question.
Nope.
I have a statement.
Very well.
And I would like to thank you and Representative Crenshaw and the members of the committee for today, because I think this is a historical, monumental committee meeting that probably hasn't existed in this century. And it brings hope for the future. And Commissioner and the task force and Mr. Olson, your history lesson today was very well received. Your comparisons with the past and the present were evident. And in recent years, my visits to the reservation of the Tribal Community College in our area, I have seen a complete change in attitude of people entering the schools from the earliest to the oldest, in that there's joy and there's fun and laughter. And the despair that I felt as a career teacher of never just being able to meet the needs of the kid, native kid, and pull them along to where their potential existed is way in the background now, because the possibility exists. And more than anything else about today that makes this a monumental day are the people that have been here to participate with their laughter and their listening, their agreement, and Mr. White coming down to give us his lesson. We have never had an atmosphere in a committee that I participated in with diversity with such a comfortable reception. And I appreciate it so much for everyone that's been here. And you've made a difference. And together, you've offered solutions. And it is our obligation and responsibility to carefully go through those solutions and recommendations and make a difference through appropriations and where we're going with our plan for the future. So thank you, Miigwetch. You've made a difference.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And I want to thank the committee members for their engagement. I want to thank the testifiers, especially Commissioner and Mr. Olson, and the rest of our testifiers, Ms. Wise, Mr. Papasidoro, and Ms. Lavoie. And also to all of the tribal members who are here in the audience. Generally, committee decorum, I would, you know, remind you all to not show so much enthusiasm in that, but I have offered a little latitude today because I do think Representative Murphy has captured again how important this was today. So thank you all, and with that, we are way over time. Committee is adjourned.
And we thank you.